Please, Father, awaken our spirits as we review your word, practical applications of it. Awaken us to see things and speak to each of our individual lives. I beg you, Father, with my brothers and sisters here in Yahshua's name, for your grace, your loving kindness, provision, your instruction, as the song just says, speak to us, Father, from the inside out. In Yahshua always, amen. Hallelujah, indeed. Brothers, sisters, and friends, I'm Brother Michael Bannock from Fulton, Missouri. It's so good to be back. I was homesick during the previous 2 weeks in Chicago. I found myself missing so many things here. Brother Javon and I and at least one other brother, Jose, are from Chicago, and I can tell you, when I go up there, I miss my favorite sandwich shops, but there's no way. Oh, it's just so, I know now why I'm pulled away. You know, I have this hidden fear that the Almighty will tell me to go back there and do a work. Oh, and because the city is just a very hard place for a righteous man to be. And the iniquity is everywhere, with the thundering, booming cars pulling up to the red light next to you, and sirens, everybody's sirens, all these emergencies. How many of these emergencies are traceable to sin? Somebody got shot? Somebody's being robbed or mugged? Well, anyway, it is great to be back. It really is. Oh, it looks like... We had this problem in a previous presentation of mine, didn't we? Okay, I failed to remove the internal timing cues, so at times this is going to jump around, but now I know why and I can handle it. I'm Brother Michael Bannock. The title of my remarks today is The Fourth Commandment of Ten. This will be a review of the Sabbath. It'll be an unusual approach. My desire is to stir up your thoughts about how to keep this day, how to guard it, and to delight in it. Here's an outline for y'all. We're going to talk about the commandment itself, meaning of key words in the command, ways of breaking the commandment, ways of keeping the command. We're going to have some historical notes to encourage you to see how we fit in historically with others. I'll give you some strategies for keeping the command. And also some strategies going forward. We're not finished in our understanding of this holy day. And I'll give you some conclusions and summary from a passage in Isaiah. Here's the command itself. Exodus 20, verse 8 through 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh, the Elohim. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. Look, everybody gets a day off. For in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now notice the very first word. Remember, it's kind of ironic, the commandment that starts out with the word remember, so many people have forgot. It just totally slipped their mind. To tell you the truth, I have a hard time remembering the Sabbath week to week. And we'll cover some of that. I think we all do. Now, because it does not start with the words thou shalt not, the commandment, it does not have those words thou shalt not, it is considered a positive command, a proactive command to do something. To keep it holy. Let's take the Hebrew Strong's number 6942, Kadosh. So many ways of pronouncing this. Kadosh, Kadesh, Kadosh. A lot of different inflections out there. But this is just from Strong's. We know Strong's is only a starting point, but in this case it's pretty good. It talks about to be clean, appoint, bid to make consecrate, dedicate, defile, hallow. Keep, prepare, proclaim, purify, sanctify, holy. Fundamentally, it means to be set apart. And this business of being set apart, holy, being special. I like the word special. Here's some ways of breaking the commandment: working on this day for profit, compelling others to work on this day, making business plans on this day, seeking our own pleasure on this holy day, talking up sports and entertainment on this day, doing anything outside of necessary chores. For example, if you're cleaning up the house on this day, fixing the car, mowing the lawn, doing the dishes, these are ways of breaking the Sabbath. There are necessary chores that vary from house to house, but they might include feeding animals, opening and closing windows in response to weather conditions, about clearing snow off of access areas. You don't want people getting hurt. There's lots of ways of breaking this commandment. Even though it's a positive commandment to keep it holy, it does imply a lot of thou shalt nots, doesn't it? Because there's a lot of things you can do to rob this day of its specialness. It's supposed to be a special day. The rebellious heart will gravitate towards language that speaks to the exception. Well, what about this? What about that? What about, I want to do this. What about that? And you're going to want to do things. If people are asking lots of questions about what they can and cannot do on Sabbath, from my personal experience, I know that they are dealing with all kinds of lusts inside. I'm going to speak to that in a moment. Here's some ways to guard and keep this command. Rest, worship, study, singing. You notice there's no explicit command to worship on that day. We're told explicitly to rest, but keeping it holy means worship, study, singing. How about fellowship? We must always tie that fellowship into the kingdom in substantive way. Thankfully, his kingdom is big. The fellowship we engage in must enhance our love and knowledge for Yahweh, for each other, and for his kingdom. And here's some examples. How about wholesome and pleasurable meals? Our Jewish friends really have the jump on us here. They invest a lot of money in getting yummy foods during the week to enjoy on Sabbath. And they get their best Sabbath clothes in order for Sabbath. They prepare way in advance to make Sabbath a big deal. And, they welcome the Sabbath in, and they bid a very bitter farewell when it goes. They kind of have the jump on us in terms of understanding how special this day is. But when we're fellowshipping, we can be inquiring on each other's welfare. We can review news of archaeological developments in the Holy Land, updates on the work and the ministry, planning for feasts and outreach, pursuit of natural remedies and nutritional insights. The list is actually endless because Yahweh's kingdom is a big kingdom. Here's an observation. If you believe that the Sabbath is too long or boring, you either are not thinking hard enough or else during the week you are not working hard enough. I'm going to buy a little time by toggling through these so it doesn't jump on by accident. But I'm going to take you back in time. I was in my early 20s. I was just corresponding with the late beloved Elder Don Mansager, and I finally caught up with them all at a regional meeting in St. Louis. First time I ever met Yahweh's people. I hadn't been baptized yet, but I had been kind of keeping Sabbath for years on my own. And I pestered people with questions over fellowship mealtime. I pestered them with questions. What can I do on Sabbath? What am I allowed to do on Sabbath? And I was hopping around tables asking people the same question. Well, I'll tell you what was really going on inside. I was hoping somebody would say, oh, it's okay to watch baseball on Sabbath. I was hoping somebody would say, it's okay to watch funny movies on Sabbath. I was hoping people would give me license to fulfill my desires on this day. That's what I really wanted. But the responses that I still remember are those with humility in their faces, talking about how wonderful the day is. It's not long enough. There's so many things in Yah's word that give them pleasure. I had to grow into that. I had to go learn that and figure that out. Maybe you will too. Those of you who are scratching your head and wondering what to do with this day, give yourself time. I'm not into the beat them up and clobber them over the head, you know, kind of a message. There are times when we do have to come on strong, but learning how to keep Sabbath takes time, it takes good examples, it takes being honest with yourself. And you have to forsake everything that has to do with yourself. I know what it's going to take some effort to train children with all their energies in how to keep the feasts. But really, back then in the 1970s and early 80s, the Sabbath was too long for me. And I was bored because I was not thinking hard enough about the Sabbath. I was not preparing enough. I was not keeping it holy enough. And I was not working hard enough during the week. Frankly, I think the ancients, when they came to the Sabbath, they collapsed into a lump of putty in their beds. I think they were very tired from the hard work that they had done. In this age, we have it so easy. I'm going to continue with this theme, if you think the Sabbath is too long. Here are some clues to indicate if you've gone too far with your pursuits on the Sabbath. Are you making a lot of noise? This thing that you're into, are you making lots of noise? It's probably foreign to the Sabbath. Are you working up a sweat on whatever you're into? Could you put this off until a non-holy time? We know of one case where Yahshua healed on Sabbath. And that seems to be a real special situation because we have another episode where he was healing people after sundown. After Sabbath. But usually we can put things off till after non-holy time. Are you annoying others? Whatever this enterprise is that you're into, are you pestering others, aggravating others? Here's another one. Are you at peace with what you're proposing to do on Sabbath? Colossians 3:15 says, "And let the peace of Messiah rule in your hearts, to the which also you are called in one body, and be ye thankful." So many times I ignored that piece, just to go do what I wanted to do on Shabbat. But believe me, those of you who are tuning in through the media outreach or right now on the broadcast, we'll get tough and strong on Sabbath. But Sabbath is immovable as a truth, as a doctrine. It's unmovable. But learning how to keep Sabbath is a bit of an art. Learning, just getting there, is an act of worship. Let that peace rule in your hearts, because when that peace flees, that's a tip-off, you are outside of Yahweh's will. Here's some additional ways to keep and guard this commandment. This place is a sanctuary, this place that we're in now. That means it's a set-apart place. I should be able to come here on Sabbath and cast my eyes and my ears anywhere with absolute freedom. I should not be afraid to look at anybody or anything. I should not be able to hear, I should not fear listening to a conversation unless it's something extremely private. I have no desire to dip into private conversations, but I should be able to go about without fear of offense in this holy place, especially on a holy day. Let's talk about two things, provocative dress and lewd conversation. We here at YRM, we say no to provocative dress. We've got a dress code we've published. Girls, we know when you're dressing provocatively. The word provocative means to promote talk. And a woman comes to the feast dressed provocatively or comes to services dressed provocatively, it stimulates talk. I guarantee you that. Essentially, some of the men typically get together and scratch their heads and say, what are we going to do? Who's going to approach her? I remember about a year ago, I went to all the men in the fellowship, and I said, if your wife did something to offend me, do you want me to come to you or to come to her? And I got different answers. They didn't know that this was an issue that I had been worrying about. There's many aspects to the provocative dress. I should be able to look anywhere in this place, especially on Sabbath. Some of you gals might be thinking, oh, these men got a problem with lust. It's those lustful eyes. No. Now, maybe there's some men who are still struggling with their carnal nature. But a sanctified man, here's what's going on in the mind of a sanctified man, a holy man, when he is confronted with provocative dress. He's now thinking of the world. So instead of coming here and focusing on him, who is worthy of all our praise, delighting in him, delighting in his Messiah, delighting in his advanced doctrine. I'm thinking about this worldly dress. I'm thinking about the world again. But even for those men who have not overcome their carnal mind, their carnal ways, they too have a burden when ladies come with provocative dress. One aspect, there's many aspects, but one aspect is the issue of defrauding. You know, when a woman dresses in a provocative way, she's advertising herself. And it is an act of fraud to promote your physical appearance like that when in fact you are not available. In 1 Thessalonians 4:6, it says that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any manner. Because that Yahweh is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified. Girls, if you have any question in your mind, you're better off leaning toward a conservative dress, holiness. When we come together for Sabbath to worship in the beauty of holiness, I don't want to be thinking about your provocative dress. Lewd conversation. This is usually a problem with the guys. This is a problem with the guys. And I'll tell you what brings it to mind. There are some conservative talk shows that I have listened to on occasion. And most of these guys are supposed to be practicing Christians, but I've noticed as of late they're starting to inject profanity in there. I can't listen to them anymore. But we had a fellow here. I'll be careful. Don't worry. Everything's under control. But we had a fellow come here for baptism a long time ago. And after fellowship and everything, after services and meal, we're outside chatting in a circle, and he told a lewd joke. There's kind of a silence fell over the gathering. And I said to him, brother, I'm not allowed to laugh at that. That was the best answer I could come up with. You know, that same character proved to be a problem. He was ultimately put out. But you see, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And if you're so dumb to be trafficking in lewd jokes and lewd conversation, you're tipping me off to who you are. We especially don't want to see that here on Shabbat. So these are ways to guard and keep his commandment, to say no to these things. The way we dress, the way we act, the way we talk. We want people to come here and feel comfortable, don't we? Let's talk about some historical notes on the Sabbath. I'd like us to feel that, to know that we are part of a larger fabric of Sabbath keepers through history. Before the Dark Ages, if your religious body, if your organization, your assembly, was outside the influence of the Roman Catholic Church, you kept a seventh-day tradition. This is historically verifiable. The congregations in China, yes, there were believers in China who kept the Sabbath. Then there's the St. Thomas Christians of India. I met one of them. The region is called Malabar, India. It's in the southwest part of India. They're still up and running today, but they're now affiliated with the Catholic Church. And one of their members told me, he said, we changed our beliefs at the point of a sword. All the congregations of the East, in the eastern part of the Levant, the Near East, they kept Seventh-day Sabbath. Historically, we know this. The Ethiopian congregations kept the Sabbath. The Celtic assembly in Ireland, very well documented. These are all organizations outside the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. But if your religious body was within the influence of the Roman Catholic Church, you kept a Sunday tradition. Sabbath keepers like you and I were typically hunted through the hills of Europe like animals. Some of the things they did to us are unspeakable. It's bad enough that they put us on racks and tore our bodies apart, burned us alive. There are things that they did that are unspeakable to us. If we ever engage our Christian friends and congregations, we could look them in the eye and say, you know, your spiritual ancestors abused my spiritual ancestors. There was the Sabbatati of Europe, the Subotniks of Russia, and others who are known as Sabbath keepers throughout history. We're part of a long continuum of Sabbath keepers. We have much to delight in there. The world at large was changed to Sunday through the missionary efforts of the Jesuits. Now, the Sabbath, more historical notes. The Sabbath as a principle was known and upheld by many of the great reformers. They simply had the wrong day due to prior outside influence. And let me touch upon this. When we engage our Christian friends in discussion about this, you have to be careful about something because they're going to blow hot and cold. An odd number of days, they're going to say, hey, there ain't no Sabbath. It was done away with. Then on alternate days, they're going to say, yeah, the Sabbath is Sunday. These are really two different topics. Does the Sabbath still remain, and what day is it? Now, some of you may have seen that debate between Jim Staley and that other Christian fellow. And I think I could have done a better job than Jim Staley, because he failed to bring this into perspective. There was actually two debates going on at the same time, and they didn't catch it. Is there a Sabbath? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, what day is it? And beware of people who will blend these topics as though they can dance over sword blades. John Wesley, Charles Finney, Charles Spurgeon, Dwight Moody, you've heard of the Moody Bible Institute? All these guys upheld the Sabbath as a principle. Charles Spurgeon is very interesting because he flourished a little over 100 years ago. And he wrote about his mixed feelings after riding a trolley car to give a sermon somewhere. He thought, I don't know if I should have done that. It was a Sunday, giving a sermon. But in his heart, he said, there's something wrong there. Look it up. The original London Baptist Confession of Faith upholds the Sabbath. They just mentioned the wrong day. They come on kind of strong, endorsing Sabbath. In John Bunyan's classic, Pilgrim's Progress, toward the end of the book, he mentions repentance from Sabbath breaking, along with many other things. You know, two generations ago, most Christians would not wash their car on Sunday. I'll bet if Don Mansager was here, he would confirm that for us. But now nobody cares. They rip and run. The modern American tradition is to check in for services for an hour or two, sing your lungs out, and then go catch the ball game. It wasn't so until recently. Now, this is why I put a lot of hope, a lot of stock into Yahweh's restoration ministry, and there's others like it out there, where we're not just restoring the correct day for Sabbath, we're restoring Sabbath. People have forgotten all about these things. We're headed in the right direction. It's just not very comfortable being ahead of your time and being alone. But when you look to the past, you find out we really weren't alone. Here's another historical note I enjoy sharing with people. There's a well-known document out there. It's written in Greek. It was written before the Dark Ages, and it's called the Constitutions of the Holy Apostle. Now, I don't know if constitution should be plural or singular. I've seen it both, I believe. Now, it's unlikely that this document was written by the apostles, but it does mention practices that are of interest to us. And one of them is the management of weekly fasting. In that document, it talks about the days of the week as the first day, second day, third day. But when it comes to Friday, it's called the preparation day. I'm sorry about those jumps, friends. Jumps in the view graphs here. And I found it odd because I found several translations online. Some of them call Friday, Friday. Some call it the preparation day. And I thought, wait a minute, if it's a preparation day, that would be a different wording in the Greek. And I managed to find a Greek manuscript. I had to go look up the word for preparation day in the Greek New Testament. and make sure I have the right word there from Strong's Concordance. And sure enough, the Greek says preparation day. What this means, you know, regardless of what else is in the document, what this means is that there were brethren before the Dark Ages who were keeping the seventh-day Sabbath. And part of that worship was preparing for it. So we have further evidence that the earliest believers kept the seventh-day Sabbath just like you and me. Some more historical notes on the Sabbath. You should have at hand your favorite proofs for Sabbath. We are supposed to have a ready answer. And so these are two of my very favorites. In Matthew 24:20, Yahshua says, Pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. Question, has winter been done away with? Okay, now prior to these last two winters in Missouri, I would have pointed out the harsh winters of Chicago. Believe me, if you've lived in Chicago, you know for sure winter has not been done away with. So if the winter hasn't been done away with, what makes you think Sabbath was done away with? Then Yahshua's sovereignty over the Sabbath. In Mark 2:27-28, now he said, it disappears in three of the evangels. I just happened to pick the one from Mark. And he said unto them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is master also of the Sabbath. He's the boss of this day. So you're telling me he's the master of something that's been evaporated? He's ruler over nothing. And you know, how can you make that intellectual leap? Of course, we have that tremendous prophecy from end of Isaiah telling us the Sabbath will be kept in the kingdom to come. I'm going to talk now about strategies for keeping the commandment. There's so much that could be said here. Alan has given at least two wonderful sermons about practical aspects of Sabbath. I'm going to do what I can to contribute to that. Now, the preparation day actually starts on Thursday night. I realized this 10 years ago, and I'm still struggling to bake it in. Now, I'm going to describe to you a typical botched scenario. It's Sunday night, and a crisis emerges, a crisis that takes all night long. It doesn't wrap up until sunrise. And then there's a follow-up to that crisis on Tuesday night. Wednesday night has its own things to do, its own unexpected developments. I don't even want to get into it. Yeah, this series of events actually happened to me once. And then there's a Thursday evening social appointment, and a social appointment made the prior week. And so that pulls all the remaining oxygen out of the air for preparation for Sabbath. Busy all day Friday, and so I stumble into Sabbath unprepared. I think the human experience is the same for everybody. I think everybody in this room can relate to a series of events like this. I see one of the moms is giggling over there, stumbling into Sabbath unprepared. But then again, I'm very impressed with the dedication of the brotherhood in my network. I know that my brothers in Yahshua are making sacrifices. I'm constantly amazed at the courage and the diligence and the faithfulness I see in the household of faith. It really does give me a lift. So maybe this has happened to you on occasion, but this happens to me all too often. The series of events actually happened this week. Now the mistake was, here's was the mistake. Thursday evening, I agreed to have dinner with a consultant from Japan last Thursday night. Oh, it was wonderful. Those of you who know me well know I love looking at the world through the eyes of other people. And we had a really great time. But we got together Thursday because that was the only night he was available this week. I should have said, no, let's put it off till another night, another week. But I wasn't thinking. I didn't remember the Sabbath. Because if you're busy on Friday, Thursday is your preparation. Preparation day actually starts on Thursday night. If I had simply guarded Thursday night and kept that open, you know, remember the Sabbath, I could be adequately prepared. But this is where Sabbath keeping is now. There's all kinds of little things I'm adjusting here and there in my Sabbath observance. This is the one I'm working on now, to make Thursday my preparation time. By the way, you know, it gets really bad in the winter because sundown is early on Friday. Let me back up. Sundown is early on Friday nights in the winter. I wonder how many of you have noticed how little you get done on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Have you? We have Thursday Thanksgiving here in the States, and I got all these big ideas the following Friday morning. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go there. I'm going to get this done. Then what do I get? I get traffic jams, and the stores I want are closed. The places I want to go to are closed. So often I like these messages to be more like the start of a conversation. We could be exchanging ideas on how to better prepare for Sabbath. Here's an availability warning. Do not answer the phone on Sabbath unless you know for sure who it is. I was about an hour from visiting the assembly up in Eaton Rapids, Michigan. This is when I lived in Chicago, and the phone went off. And I pushed the button to answer too quickly, and it was my boss on Sabbath. And he tells me about, oh, we're working on this problem, we're working on that problem. I said, Rob, I can't help you today. I can't help you, Rob. I wish I could. He says, you're not going to help me with this thing. I said, I wish I could, but I can't. Then I closed with my standard line. I says, Rob, you know, I'm probably ticking you off, but if I'm going to say no as a matter of principle, maybe you have found an employee you can trust. You know, because this is something bigger than me. About a half a year later, he was passing out bonuses, and everybody got the same bonus. And he took me aside. He says, I just want you to know I didn't hold that against you. You know? But you got to practice finding ways to say no. A nice way to avoid saying no is to not answer the phone unless you know for sure who it is. It may not have, I'm sure it did not escape your notice that I had a hard time getting here today. And there was some concern about whether I'd make it for the message. There was some alarm over the matter. But you see, when the phone rang and it was Mick Martin, I could see it in the caller ID because I programmed his number in there. And I could confidently answer. Don't answer the phone unless you know for sure who it is on Sabbath. You're protecting the day. You're remembering the day. You're guarding the commandment. That word for keep the commandment, by the way, also means to guard. And that's why you see the word guarding commandments come up in my language as of late. Here's some strategies for keeping the command. I'm going to talk about getting Sabbath and feast day time off work. It starts with you and your attitude. We're going to spend a lot of time for the next several minutes talking about your attitude. I've been told that fonts that are smaller than 20 don't show up good. They look big enough to me. I hope you guys can see these. First, there are brethren taking menial jobs under difficult circumstances just so they can keep Sabbath. You must have that attitude in you too, that you may have to sacrifice to keep Sabbath. If you guys ever see me as a greeter at Home Depot or something like that, you'll know that something like that maybe happened to me. But I pray not. I like to be a light where I'm at. People who make these kind of sacrifices, they are in my hall of fame. The angels see it. Yahweh sees it. The starting point for getting Sabbath time off is to recognize your duty to do excellent work for your employer. Think love. Think agape. So that when it is time to seek time off, you have already gained his favor. So let's just take the scenario where you are goofing off, coming in late, always clowning around, extending your break time, not attending to business, behind in your tallies. And then you come hully-gullying up to the boss and say, oh, I got to take this day off. You know, you look like a buffoon. And by the way, you don't make the Elohim of the heavens look very good either. No, you should be building up a reputation of trust and diligence, follow through, enthusiasm. You want to get enthusiastic about your work, even work you don't like? Start asking yourself what you don't know about it. What don't you understand that you could know more about? And it's interesting how that trick works. You can get yourself excited about anything just by asking yourself what you don't know about the job and also how you can do it better. I have found that harsh bosses are particularly easy to win over, since no one else seems to care about them except you. I had a case where a boss was falsely accusing me of something. And it all came down to a matter of interpretation. And there was no way I was going to, I decided on the spot, I was not going to argue interpretation. He was kind of harsh with me. And instead of saying, well, I didn't look at it this way, I looked at it that way. I just said, I'm very sorry this happened. I will make sure it never happens again. I'm very, very sorry. And that got through to him. It worked. I did not find out until last month. This incident goes back about 10 years, but I just found out about a month ago what had actually happened. Maybe over lunch or something, I'll give you the details. But his interpretation of the events had even far more gravity than I thought. It was a divinely ordained thing that I be humble in the face of this false accusation. And you know, I did win favor in this guy's eye. I really did. And then over time, our relationship really ripened. The messianic ethic has many parts to it. When it comes to getting holy time off, the most important parts are humility, service, reputation, and diligence. Let's take a closer look at a biblical basis for these. You know, I just noticed that these view graphs seem to chop off the bottom. Okay, we'll have to adjust that. I was told today that we have a new projection system, and anything new is always going to have some glitches. I'll do the best I can with the part that was cut off the bottom here. First, there's humility. Proverbs 3:34. If you want anything from Yahweh, it starts with humility. Surely he scorneth the scorners, but he gives grace unto the lowly. In the New Testament writings, it says he gives grace to the humble. He resists the proud, it says, but he gives grace to the humble. We can't expect to get anything out of Yahweh if we're not humble. Humility before our employers is utterly essential. It's not something you turn on and off like the flip of a light switch. It should be a consistent demeanor. Yes, sir. At once, sir. Service, Ephesians 6:5 talks about servants and masters. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of your heart as unto the Messiah. Now, if we should do that for a master who's like harsh with us, how much more for a boss for whom we are voluntarily showing up and serving? We should be thinking, I'm serving Yahshua here. I'm doing it to him. Well, how would I do this job if he was looking over my shoulder? By the way, that Japanese guy told me over dinner, he said that he likes to coach companies on how to do better work on the production line. But there's other things too, like how to manage meetings properly. And he says, a question you should ask is, how would you act if the customer was standing right there watching what you were doing? Would he approve of what you're doing? And it's kind of like what this is saying, but from a messianic perspective. Would I serve Yahshua the way I serve these guys? How about reputation? Matthew 5:16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and honor your Father which is in heaven. See, I'm thinking long term. I'm not thinking, oh, I want the next day off. I'm thinking long term. You establish this reputation and rapport, and getting Sabbath and feast days off is much easier. Let's see. Diligence. Okay, the word diligence was at the very end of the previous slide, so I don't know where it went to here on this one, but there was an entry for diligence. And There is mention in the New Testament about not being slothful in business. You know, since I became self-employed about 6-7 years ago, I'm working harder than ever. It's easy to work for somebody else. All you got to do is make them happy. And by the way, every boss out there is a chump for results. You give them results, you give the boss results, they let you get away with things. Every boss in the world is vulnerable to that. The guy who gets the job done, yes. Then you come in there and say, need time off for the feast or the Sabbath or any of that stuff. You know, you are able to do that. Continuing on this theme, getting Sabbath and feast day time off work. Making an appeal to authority figures is part of our lives historically. Historically, we've had to defer to people whom Yahweh has placed over us. We have Joseph humbly serving those whom Yahweh has put over him in his life. What a career. He's put in charge of he shows up as a slave in a household. They put him in charge of the house. They put him in jail. They put him in charge of the jail. He winds up in Pharaoh's court. They put him in charge of the country. But he always recognized that he was serving somebody who was above him. Instead of going in there with your rights and your demands, instead of going in there thumping a Bible, the scriptures teach us to win them over, to convince them that we're not a threat to their authority and that we are dedicated to their success. You may have never looked at this passage in John the way I'm going to show it to you now, but I'd like you to think about this. Because people in authority are, especially in the world, they are very keen about the situation they're in. Those of you who are parents or shepherds here in the assembly, there's an essential ingredient in this that you've probably noticed. Have you ever noticed how much time you spend protecting people as an authority figure, as a parent, grandparent, or a minister? Spend lots of time protecting people. I'm going to toggle the slide so it doesn't time out on me, and now I'm going to read this encounter between Pilate and Yahshua. Then it's from John 19, verse 10, through the first part of verse 12. Then saith Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? So Yahshua is not answering any of these false charges. Pilate says, Knowest thou not that I have power to impale you? And have power to release you? And Yahshua answered, Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except that were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. Now notice this next part. And from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. Now, until recently, I thought Yahshua's remark was something along the lines of, You're nothing, you have no power unless you had it from heaven. I interpret it as kind of a retort. But now I look at this differently. What he did is he convinced Pilate that he's recognizing the authority Pilate has. Yeah, you have authority to kill me. I recognize that. You have authority to release me too. I recognize that. And it was given to you from above. At that moment, Pilate knows, this guy is no threat to me. And it says Pilate sought to release him. He didn't do a very good job. Historically, we know that Pilate ultimately committed suicide. I think he looks back and he thought, maybe I should have tried harder. But I would like for all of the saints to win over those who have authority over us. I'm dedicated to your success. I recognize your position. You know, to this day, as much as I'm dedicated to this principle, to this day, I have to fight that carnal inclination to answer my customers with words like, yes, but. I should be doing everything I can to accommodate their wishes. Those of us who are in authority and have authority, who supervised others, we know how hard it is to find cooperative subjects. And somebody comes along and says, yep, I'm all for you. How can I make this go better? It'll be like golden apples to them. So more about the Sabbath time off and such. If you are not sure what to say when you engage the boss for that discussion about days off, consider fasting and praying, as did Esther before she approached the ruthless king Ahasuerus. I think some of your translations call him Artaxerxes. But she fasted and prayed, and in Josephus' account, she was like wobbly. She was on Rubber Lake Street. According to ancient Persian law, if you approach the king without an invitation, he'd kill you. He'd just have your head cut off. He wouldn't even think anything of it. But to gain favor before him, she fasted. She also had her uncle Mordecai fast. You know, if any of you ask me to fast and pray with you before that big meeting with the boss, I'll do it. I'll have to check my schedule. You might, by the way, fasting can induce halitosis, okay? Your breath might be foul, so you might have to chew gum or gargle or something before the meeting. Don't chew gum in the meeting with the boss, though, okay? But you want to be mindful of these things. You see, friends, my approach to this is to create, because the Sabbath is as holy as it is, because we're guarding it and keeping it, we are then guarding and keeping everything that enables us to keep the Sabbath. By the way, these exercises are great character development vehicles. I'm going to get to this in a bit. But wouldn't it be great if your boss said, yeah, she's always there for me. She always comes through. She's there when I need her. Some of you guys work at a factory that's real hard to work for. It's a warehouse up the road. That's not a factory. It's a warehouse up the road. And I can tell you they have a hard time finding people to stick with the job. But those of you who are in that hard place, you know, you let that light shine, they say, man, I can count on them. They're there when I need them. Here are some suggested phraseologies. This is just a suggestion, all right? I think we should have workshops on this. At the feast, we're going to have workshops on marriage communication or something. Maybe someday we'll have workshops on how to ask for Sabbath off. But here are some phraseologies that I've worked on. I'm not out to impress you or to convert you, but I belong to a strict branch of Christianity, and we are bound to give 100% to our employers. But I'm also bound to a certain time of religious obligation. Though I need time off from Friday evening to Saturday, end of day, I am available for anything you need the rest of the week. Just a suggestion, change it around any way you want. Then there's the interview process before you have the job. Your questions and answers on the job interview should be energized with words of diligence and attention to detail. And then, after you establish yourself as somebody who's a go-getter, want to make things happen, you can transition. It's okay. We had a little fallout there. It's okay. We can say something like this in a job interview. I'm not out to impress you or to convert you, but I belong to a strict branch of Christianity, and we do everything with a Jewish flavor. For example, I go to services on Saturday, and the entire day is a time of religious obligation. I'm willing to take on dirty jobs and work alternate hours, but I cannot be there at those times. Here's Brother Michael's last card to play. If the discussion is not going well and it looks like your boss is turning you down or the job opportunity is slipping from reach, here is something you might add. I understand your position and I would like you to think about something. I'm making this appeal to you at the risk of displeasing you, and I don't want that to happen. If I'm willing to take that risk for something bigger than myself, then maybe you have finally found an employee you can trust. Please reconsider your position on this. There really is a lot to that, because if you're willing to lose employment over a matter of principle, well, maybe the boss has found somebody he can finally count on. But I tell these guys on interviews, I say, it's never been a problem before. It's never been a problem in the past. It's not even been a bit of a hardship, because we always found workarounds. Here's another version. Again, just Brother Michael toying with the words. I understand your position. I believe in something bigger than myself, something that teaches me to serve you diligently. I know I'm making this appeal to you at the risk of displeasing you, and I don't want that. If I'm willing to create that risk, then maybe you have finally found an employee you can trust. Now, here's the different part. Even though I've heard the law would support me in this, I would rather win you over. Please tell me, how have I failed to win your trust? And the boss will probably say something, it's not about trust, it's the schedule. You know, you got to have the schedule. And then you say, I ask you to please reconsider your position on this. I see a typo there, I'm sorry. I ask you to please reconsider your position on this. It's okay to prepare and think these things through. This is an important matter. We're trying to protect holy time. Each of you will have to do it according to your faith. For whatever is not of faith is sin. Do what you have the faith for. Say what you have the faith for. Strategies going forward. We're winding down here. You sure have been generous listening to all this, and I appreciate that. Our society doesn't care about the Sabbath or holiness or anything else like that. And we often find ourselves coming up with strategies to deal with Sabbath against a backdrop of society that doesn't care anymore. I don't know what's worse, a society that doesn't care about Sabbath or a society that was strictly Sunday keeping. I don't know which one would be harder. So because of this, many brethren are just saying, look, you know, I want to disengage from the whole thing. And there's brethren who are exploring ways of coming off the grid to live free of all utilities on Sabbath. Not the whole week, but just on the Sabbath. Now what happens is once a week you get free training on this. Remember, Yahshua said, come out of her, my people. It's a process, isn't it? This may seem odd or fanatical, but there are three points that bear mention here. The apostles were always off the grid. You didn't see the apostles unplugging the television or anything like that. In the tribulation, having refused the mark, that's where we will be anyway. We're going to refuse that mark. We're not going to have utilities delivered to our home anyway. Such an approach to life does make one more aware of Yahweh's presence and provision. I'd like each of you to take stock of where you're at, where you're going. Looking into the future, I'm not establishing doctrine here, I'm not demanding anything, but I'm asking you, where is Yahweh's Spirit leading you? What is he leading you to explore? When I hear of brethren keeping bees and cows and chickens, I'm thinking, yeah, they're one step further in that direction. And I don't think it's a quest for the granola culture. I think there's some divine guidance going on there. I didn't happen to mention this, but in the notes, but there was a dear brother who stayed with me one summer, and we agreed on Sabbath that we would disconnect all the utilities. And we did it step by step. First, we disconnected the electricity for the Sabbath, and we let the food in the refrigerator just coast for a day. That was a very peaceful experience. Then we experimented shutting off the water, which meant we had to store up buckets of water. And there's ways of managing that. I'd rather tell you offline. But we got to a place with the utilities down. And we just had candles burning through the night. There was an indescribable shalom in the house. And I look forward to the day when I can do that always. We agreed it was just an experiment for the summer. We wanted to learn all we could from that. And I look forward to the day actually when that's a comfortable part of my life. The idea is to keep the Sabbath holy, not to impress your friends. But what are you doing to make the Sabbath holy? What are you doing going forward? Here's a summary of the presentation. After this sheet, I'm going to read from Isaiah 58. The command emphasizes holiness. There are many ways to remember this day. There are many ways to forget this day. A lot of things are banging on the door through the week to make you forget this day. The Bible study and research, uphold this day through history, if you do some digging. Have your favorite Bible proofs at hand. Make sure you know, have a ready answer. Remembering this day equals preparing for it well in advance. Preparation day starts on Thursday evening. Get Sabbath and feast days off. I have a typo there, I'm sorry. But getting Sabbath and feast days off requires a faithful relational strategy for your employer. Love your employer. Make it a conscientious act of will to love your employer. If I can love my enemies, surely I can love my employer. Seek their welfare. This gets into things about cursings and blessings. You should be careful what you say, huh? Make Sabbath a delight with wholesome and yummy plans in advance. I'm going to read here. I'm going to go to the last slide. I just hope it doesn't jump on me. But I'm going to read here a passage you've all heard about Sabbath. It's at the end of Isaiah 58. Yahweh describes in this chapter people who are fasting with poor results. He talks about relieving the oppressed, doing justice, showing works of kindness. A good friend of mine posted this up, but he skipped the part about Sabbath. So I'm going to begin with verse 12, which we cite here at Yahweh's Restoration Ministry in our logo, in our literature. Isaiah 58:12 to the end of the chapter. And they that shall be of you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy of Yahweh, honorable, and shall honor it, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, and shall you delight yourself in Yahweh, and I will make you to ride upon the high places of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Yes, hallelujah. The reason the Sabbath belongs at the end of a chapter that talks about overturning injustices in society, I mean, that's what Isaiah 58 is about. The reason is because if you can't keep Sabbath, you're oppressed. If you're being forced to work Sabbath, by definition, you are overworked and underpaid. Anybody forced to work Sabbath is being overworked. And you can't pay me enough to work Sabbath. Yes, Sabbath keeping is the sign of a free man. Question, what's keeping you from keeping Sabbath? Thank you for your attention. I'm going to call forth the moderator, Brother Javon. Thank you all for your time.